The top storylines, the breakdown of all the divisions, surprises, disappointments, my over-under win totals, my New York Met 2024 prediction, as well as my World Series as to who's going to represent the AL and NL, the 2024 Major League Baseball preview is on deck. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you could actually read. That's right. No 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste, how could I forget, the taste, crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reels here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular, just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reels podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reels as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, Michael people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic and excellent spirits. That's right. Play ball as the curtain is going to raise on the Major League Baseball season, which starts later today, even with a couple of rainouts, and I'll get to that later on. But you want everything from pillar to post, what to expect over the course of 162 games with my in-season predictions, divisions, over-under win totals, World Series, etc. You've come to the right place as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first-timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Monday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And let's get right to it. No fooling around. Let's break it all down. And I'm going to start with the top storylines. We always have to go through that just to kind of get an overview to get you ready for the season. And yes, we could kind of cut the league or both leagues in half because we know who are the do's and the don'ts, contenders, pretenders. But again, that's why they play the games. You got to see how this all pans out because nobody thought in their right frame of mind that last year at this time that the Arizona Diamondbacks were going to go to a World Series. So yes, I get it that we may have a Cinderella. We may have a team that literally comes out of nowhere. Understood, but we understand also that baseball is very top heavy and the teams that are going to compete at the end of the day when it's all said and done, when we get to October, those are going to be the teams that will rise to the top, so we think, as opposed to the other teams that are kind of flailing or are those pretenders trying to be contenders to get to see if they could be the Arizona Diamondbacks or even the Texas Rangers for that matter, because although there were some expectations going in, but it was the other team in state, the Houston Astros, that a lot of people thought would get to a World Series. And as we saw, the road warriors that the Texas Rangers were, getting their first world championship in their franchise's history. And that's right. It is a coin flip. It is a toss-up. And sadly, for the sports fan out there that isn't really into baseball, that kind of floats in and out or just waits till October to see how this is all going to unfold, I get it that it's not the sport that it once was. It's a far cry, although they're trying to resuscitate it with all the rule changes and obviously the speeding of the game, pitch clocks, etc. But I grant you that even though it may not be like it once was, but if you're here watching or listening, you're going to get an in-depth preview as to what to expect. And let's get right to it. To start us off, these to me are the four storylines going into this Major League Baseball season. And the first one, and it's obvious, and I get it, they already played two games. And even though they'll start their season tomorrow at home, Chavez Ravine, where the Dodgers, all the expectations of what they have in front of them, pretty much it was going to be 162-0 and 11-0 in the postseason, a World Series sweep for the cherry on top or bust. And we understand that that's not going to be the case, but the Dodgers, who will host the Cardinals tomorrow, and I understand Shohei Ohtani is now a bit of a cloud over the organization as far as the distraction goes. And who knows how that's going to play out. I'm going to talk about that more on the podcast later today that you're going to get. But for right this very moment, we know the cast of characters. We know the type of team they have. We know who's been brought in. And not only that, but he also signed Will Smith, their catcher, to a 10-year, $140 million deal. So you want to add that. Another log to the fire as they are the evil empire of the sport, where the Mets had that last year, so they just passed that on across the nation from Flushing to Chavez Ravine. But this Dodger team, as we know, with everything that is riding on this season, it's not about the long term. It's not about the 10-year contract of Shohei Ohtani. It's not about what the plan is over the course of that contract or even the next half dozen years or the next 5 years. It really starts here. And we could talk about their expectations and really what's all right in front of them. But how I look at it is, if this team does not have a World Series championship at the end, this season is a bust. That's it. Because when you look back at last year getting swept by Arizona, it's not about them getting to the championship series. It's not about them even getting to a World Series. It's about winning the whole thing. Anything short of that, it's a colossal disappointment, similar to what I talked about in the Celtics. I got to pivot that for a second. Not that they had major expectations like the Dodgers coming in, but to me, the Celtics, even if they go up against the Denver Nuggets in an NBA final, if they lose in Game 7 in 10 overtimes, it's still going to be an epic failure. And the same for the Dodgers. If they go Game 7, whether against the Yankees, the Astros, whomever it may be, and they lose a 25-inning affair, it is going to be one of the all-time just failures in the sport. Because this team that did win a championship in the COVID year, mind you, no celebration, no parade. It's almost as if it's been an afterthought to a certain extent. And with them not winning a World Series and an 162-game season, this is it. And I don't care who they bring in next year. I don't care even if they flame out and they bring in all stars at every position. And when you look at the team as it is right now, they pretty much have that. I understand it's a bit of a stretch, but you get my point. So to me, the Dodgers have the bullseye. They're the hunted. There are a lot of fan bases and a lot of cities are going to want to see the Dodgers come to their town and root against them and boo. And you're going to have to wonder the makeup of this team in those hostile environments. I don't expect them, if they do happen to go to Cleveland this year, off the top of my head, I don't know that, but if they do go to Cleveland, are the Guardian fans going to come out and boo the Dodgers lustily over the course of a three-game series? Probably not, but when they come to New York, obviously, and they make two trips to New York, obviously, Citi Field with the Mets, but they do play the Yankees at Yankee Stadium, and wherever else they may go, whether it be Chicago, whether it be Philadelphia. Now, the Red Sox, they do go out to L.A. this year, so they're not going to Fenway, but you understand where I'm coming from. So that's item number one, where with everything that has cast upon them from the offseason up until right this very minute with the Ohtani investigation regarding the former interpreter who was axed last week and how this is all going to play out, who knows? And again, I'm going to unpack that a lot more tomorrow, or later on, I should say, on the podcast, because I'm recording this the day before. So for the Dodgers, and even with Yamamoto and all the expectation that he has with the $325 million contract, all right, we'll forgive him for the start in Korea. Mind you, it was one inning, and his ERA is 45 at the moment, so let's see if he can make amends now here on American soil. But there's still plenty of season to go. Obviously, we're just getting warmed up and even started, for that matter, if you're the Dodger fan, as they're 1-1 right now. But that is item number one right out of the gate. The second biggest storyline to me has to be the Yankees. And I'm not trying to throw any type of shade or have this prognostication of all of what's going to happen in the Bronx this year. But think about it. The manager is in a walk year. He is not signed after this year. So that right there tells you, despite the fact that they love Aaron Boone, and as I've said time in and time out on this podcast, he is a guy that is more of a caretaker of the players in the clubhouse. And I understand he's going to have to stick up for them, but there is no accountability whatsoever. Every time you hear him in the press conference, you could have Aaron Judge go 0-for-4 and a golden sombrero in a big game. And I understand you're not going to see that during the regular season, but let's say in October, he's going to highlight, oh, he had some good swings on some pitches. But he went 0-for-4 with four strikeouts. But that's Aaron Boone in a nutshell. And not only for him to be a lame duck coming into the season, coming off of a year where they did not make the playoffs, on top of the import of Juan Soto, giving up half their bullpen for the most part, to bring in Soto for 1 year as a rental, and a lot of the rumors, rumblings about maybe Soto going to Queens next year because Steve Cohen will now have some money, which is kind of weird to say, but from the standpoint of he's not going to have Verlander on the books, he's not going to have Scherzer on the books. Yes, he does have Lindor. I get it, he has to sign Pete Alonso, but it's not as if he has four or five players on his team that are making exorbitant amounts of money. So with Soto having a monster year that I think that he will, batting in front of Aaron Judge, and Judge you would think would bounce back. Now you have to wonder about his toe, and he did nurse an injury here during spring training, and he's going to be 31, I believe, late next month, maybe even 32 for that matter. So you have to wonder whether or not Father Time, not to say he's catching up to him, but is starting to knock on the door to say, all right, Aaron, you're not 26, 27 years old anymore. So you have to think about that. We know Gerrit Cole's going to be on the shelf for at least a month. So he's going to have to navigate a few minefields here because he has a starting rotation where Carlos Rodon, although it was better at the end of spring training, but certainly it's going to be a potluck with him. You don't know what you're going to get from one game to the next. Marcus Stroman, we know he's a gamer, but he could be as hot of a pitcher, but also on the flip side, be cold. And you can say that about a lot of pitchers, but look at Stroman's first half in Chicago last year and then look at his second half. That's all you need to know. Then on top of that, you have to deal with their bullpen where Clay Holmes, Jonathan Loaisiga, I understand he's pretty good. Tommy Canley, we've been down that road before. Yes, he could be good in the regular season, but in big spots, Canley, you have to put a big question mark around him. So there are expectations abound for not only the Yankees to get back in the postseason, but think about this. If they do not record the final out of this upcoming season, meaning that if they don't make the last out to win the whole thing, it's going on 15 years they haven't won a World Series. So you tell me, when we look at this 2024 season, how the Yankees are in a factor and a part of this based on what happened last year, the manager, players who are not going to be in the lineup, a rotation that's iffy, and a bullpen that is borderline spotty, that is item number two. And then and you also have Gleyber Torres in a walk here too, I might add. The third storyline, to me, are the Baltimore Orioles. And the reason why I bring them up is because today was finalized that David Rubenstein from Baltimore, part of that ownership group to go along with Grant Hill, even Michael Bloomberg, to purchase a majority of the ownership there from the Angelos family. We know Peter Angelos just passed away this past weekend. But for this organization who is on the come up with stars abound, the third baseman, the catcher, you have a pitcher there that could ascend to be, I would think, a number two starter right behind Corbin Burnes, who they brought in from Milwaukee. And with Jackson Holliday, the number one overall pick of a few years ago, waiting in the wings, this could be a team of the next century, or maybe at least toward the latter part of the 2020s and into the 2030s. And with Rubenstein, like I mentioned, from the area, and I'm sure he's going to want to keep those core players. And if I was him, I'd sign Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson right now. Forget about the arbitration years. Just give him the big time deals, similar to what Alex Anthopoulos did in Atlanta when he signed guys like Austin Riley, the center fielder Michael Harris, Ozzie Albies to team friendly deals. Even Spencer Strider, 5 years, $75 million. Think about that. Where Strider, if he were to be arbitration eligible, he's going to average a lot more than the $15 million that he signed on prior to the beginning of last year. So for Baltimore, with their young guns in the field and with Burns headlining the top of the rotation, I understand the bullpen took a hit without Felix Bautista, but you wonder about Yennier Cano. Could he be the guy that can continue his eighth inning prowess? And I know Craig Kimbrell, he's going to shake in your boots, Oriole fans. I get it. He's had a very good career. Dominant early on with the Braves, then bounced around there. Red Sox, Phillies, Cubs, you name it. But for Kimbrell to at least have some veteran presence and a guy that you're going to be walking a tightrope of dental floss, but he does know his way around the block, and you can only hope that he can harken back to his earlier days or maybe the 2018 season when he was a member of the Red Sox when they won a World Series. And to me, the Orioles, with the 101-win team last year and trying to build off of that because they got swept in the division round against the Rangers, the first time they were swept all year in a series. What the manager, Brandon Hyde, is going to take from that to infuse into his team to build from that experience, from that big-time regular season into this year, I think is fascinating. Because the Orioles, although they had a very good second half of 2022 and threatened to maybe get a wild card spot, fell short. Then last year, we saw what happened. And now this year is where they really are going to, I would think, take a bigger step. Not to say they're going to win 103, 104 games. But now they're going to have to stake their claim, not only in the division, which is very competitive, but in the American League overall as a team that is going to be here to stay and not a one-year fluke. And then the fourth thing is the balance that you have in both of the leagues, which is great because, as I mentioned earlier, when you have an Arizona-Texas World Series, as good as that is, and for not only just the baseball fan, but for the casual sports fan, but what hurts baseball is when you get that type of World Series in October, it has no juice. It doesn't have any appeal. And I understand not every year you're going to have Yankees, Dodgers, or even Astros, Phillies for that matter, or Astros, Dodgers. Understood. But anytime you have a World Series like that, the NFL could survive a Carolina-Indianapolis Super Bowl because everybody watches the Super Bowl. And the World Series doesn't have that same flair that it had 30, 40, 50 years ago. So even with those two teams making it to the mountaintop in each of their leagues, you had a flat World Series. You had a thrilling game one. Game two, Arizona went going away. And then after that, it went kaput. Texas took over. They swept the three games in Arizona, and they're your World Series champs. So even with that being said, but you have the balance because in the National League, you have the Dodgers, you have the Braves, who are obviously the two top teams in the National League as far as class goes. You have the Phillies who made it to back-to-back championship series and including a World Series 2 years ago. And then you also have another team like the Diamondbacks that you have to put in there just for a respect factor. And even what they did recently by signing Jordan Montgomery late yesterday to add to their rotation, whether your name is Eduardo Rodriguez, Zach Gallen, even a guy like Merrill Kelly who will be a number two slot in the rotation because you think Gallen is your number one. Throw in Brandon Pfaadt, who had a very good postseason. You have guys in that rotation that night in, night out, you could avoid having a long losing streak. And their bullpen is pretty good too. So you have to throw Arizona in there. Now, if you want to throw in other teams like the Giants, just based on name and what they did this past offseason, and even just recently bringing in Matt Chapman and Blake Snell, just those two guys in particular. The Padres, who another team that had so many expectations over the last couple of years, making it to a league championship series against the Phillies 2 years ago. But they still have the talent there, whether your name is Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., Xander Bogaerts, etc. And then they also work their pitching staff around to where they could bring in a guy like Dylan Cease to go along with Yu Darvish in the absence of Blake Snell going up the coast to San Francisco. The Mets, do I even throw them in the mix? considering what they did 2 years ago and then fell flat on their faces last year. But as they piecemealed it together with their pitching staff, although no Kodai Senga to start. But the National League, you do have some balance there. And the American League's the same. Top heavy, yes, with Yankees, Astros. You got to throw in the Rangers there because they did win a World Series. And not only that, but they're going to get reinforcements by the All-Star break, whether your name is Jacob deGrom or Max Scherzer, two guys that know their way around winning baseball and getting into the postseason. And then you have the Orioles that I just mentioned here in the opening segment as far as my top storyline. So you have those four teams that you could look at that could really bring a lot of sex appeal, especially when you get to October. And yes, you may have some fringe teams there. I'm not even going to include the AL Central, but could somebody else, maybe Seattle, can they do what they did a couple of years ago and make it into the postseason? Or Toronto is another team that maybe there's some expectations that they could ride high based on what they did a couple of years ago in the postseason, even though they didn't get far, losing to Seattle. But you have those teams that are on the fringe, similar to the National League with the Giants, Padres, Mets, etc. Now as I get to the divisions, it's funny because as I was looking at this morning, and the AL Central and NL Central, they remind me of the AFC and NFC South in the NFL. Because those are teams that they're going to have to get into the postseason winning a division. And we don't expect anybody else in the division to be a wild card team. But to me, that's where the buck stops. Because those teams, although they are going to have to make it to the postseason just based on winning the division, as I mentioned. But we don't expect them to go far. And I'm going to save them, not for last. I'm going to go in order with the American League and then get to the National League, etc. But I just thought that was an interesting wrinkle this morning, just trying to compare the NFL, the Souths, to the Centrals in baseball. The AL East, as we all know, that's going to be a gauntlet, a tough division to navigate. We would think that the Orioles, as a division winner, them and the Yankees, I think, are the class of the division. We already talked about the two teams overall and what they bring. I think they're both going to have big seasons. The Yankee number, I believe, is what? 92.5. I think they're going to surpass that, even without Cole to start and a very suspect pitching staff. And the Orioles, I think they're going to have a big year, too. To me, it's either one of those two teams that's going to win a division, and then obviously they'll be a wild card. Toronto, that's a team that you don't know from one day to the next. They do have some decent pitching. Kevin Gausman, Jose Barrios. Those are two guys that you could put at any top of the rotation. Not to say that they're going to all of a sudden be lights out, but they are quality arms that could win games, and not only that, but also could possibly even win a postseason series, despite the fact that in 2024, baseball isn't predicated on your starter going 7 or even 8 innings for that matter. It's get to 5 and then let the bullpen take care of the rest. But Toronto, they do have a good lineup, as we know, the George Springers of the world, obviously guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, so they do have a very good middle of the lineup with Springer at the top. But what more else are you going to get from a Toronto Blue Jay team? Highly unknown. And then you have the Rays, who I think they're going to have a down year, and I'm going to get to them a little bit more later on. They've had all this success over the last 4 or 5 years with all these regular season wins, and Kevin Cash, we know, throughout 162, and the way their team has been tailored, they're built to win in the regular season. Come October, different story, as we've seen them flame out big time, whether it was 2 years ago in the wild card round against the Guardians. I understand they went to a World Series, but they did lose to the Dodgers there in 2020, the Red Sox there in 2021, and we could go through all these scenarios with the Rays. And even last year, as they just fizzled out and did not even, they just went out with a whimper when they had the Rangers come after, as a matter of fact, it was the Rangers when they lost on the last day of the regular season and lost the division. They had to go to Tampa, and those two games down at the Trop, their offense just went on an early vacation. So Tampa, I think they're going to have a down year. The last 2 years I went to them as far as my scenario regarding my over under win totals. I'm not going to go back for the hat trick, although I have my feelings on them. And of course, we'll get to that in a minute when it comes to what their over under win total is. And for the Red Sox, as we round out the East, they have no pitching. And who knows how they're going to piecemeal this along the course of the year. Their lineup is good. It's not great with guys like Trevor Story. And let's see what's going to happen with the kid in the outfield, Duran, who's a lot of people think that he could be a star in the making. You also have other guys on Rafael Devers, can't forget him. Vaughn Grissom, who's going to be on the IL to start the season. He was a guy that was in the Chris Sale trade. And Tristan Casas, I know, is a guy that a lot of people may be a guy that could flourish in this offense, but their pitching staff, it is from hunger. They don't really have a guy that you could count on. I understand they signed Brian Bello or Bello to that six-year, $55 million deal, but are they going to bank on him to be a one or even a top two starter in their rotation? Now, they do have a very good bullpen. That they do have with Chris Martin and especially with Kenley Jansen at the back of the bullpen, but I don't expect the Red Sox to do much based on their pitching, and of course, they play in a very competitive division, even though they're only going to play their opponents 13 times as opposed to the 19 times of a couple years ago. As far as the AL Central, to me, this is a coin flip. I look at this division, we could talk about the Twins, and their number is 87.5, which I think is high, but to me, this is the best of a bad lot. I get it that the Royals could be on the come up here. I said that last year and it had a terrible year, but the Royals could be a team that could surprise people, not to say they're going to make it into the postseason or maybe even go deep into the regular season to be part of the division winning scenario. I can't see that just yet, but the Tigers, they're looking to take a step up. They're at 80.5 is their number based on what Vegas said, so that means that maybe they could be in the mix, but I don't trust them 100%. And the White Sox, although they have a very good lineup with the guys like Eloy Jimenez and Yoan Moncada, those young guns there, to go along with the other guy who eludes me at this very moment. I got to pull him up real quick. You have Moncada, you have Jimenez, who I like, and Luis Robert, the outfielder, who's very good. But when you look at their rotation, we're waiting for Michael Kopech, the guy who they traded from the Red Sox to the White Sox there in the Chris Sale deal going back to 2018, coming off of Tommy John, and he hasn't really got himself in the groove where a lot of people thought that he could be a top pitcher in the sport. And other guys that you're looking at here as far as guys that could be in a rotation, I know a name here that pops up here. I don't know if he's going to make the team, but Davey Garcia, who? Remember him? Yankee fans? I don't know if he's going to have a shot to be in this rotation, but he's a name that comes up there. Garrett Crochet is another guy that could come out of the bullpen with that firearm that he has from the left side of the mound as a lefty. But you don't really have a lot of guys, Eric Fetty, guys who, Mike Soroka, who's trying to resurrect his career. The White Sox, I think they can have a long year, although I do like their lineup. But to me, that division is the Twins to lose. And even at 87.5, they may even fall short of that. They can win a division at 84, maybe even 85 games when it's all said and done. And then out west, are you going to have another race between the Astros and Rangers? It's quite possible. But the Astros, I think right now, have the inside track to win a division. Now, can they win at home? Because remember, they were 3 games under 500 in the regular season, and they lost to teams like the Royals. They got swept by them, I believe, and lost 5 of 6 during the final stretch of the season. And they have not, for whatever reason, capitalized on home cooking to the point where they lost the ALCS to the Rangers based on all their home games because they had the home field advantage. So are the Astros going to rectify that going into this season? We know that the bullpen with Josh Hader to go along with Ryan Pressly as your 8-9 combo is going to be lethal at the back of the bullpen. And you know the mainstays are still there, where their name is Jose Altuve. Of course, Alex Bregman. You have Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker. You still have big bats in that lineup. Jeremy Pena, who needs to have a bounce back year after that great performance in the postseason 2 years ago. So you would think that they're going to be as stout as they have been over the last 7-8 years, even with a new manager, Joe Espada. As we know, Dusty Baker retired. And then let's see what Texas is going to do with Bruce Bochy. Now, remember, no Jordan Montgomery. He's gone. They've had to piecemeal their rotation. We understand that they still have a guy like Nathan Eovaldi. We've got to wait to hear what's going to happen with Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer as we get deeper into the season, but we expect them to come back. But is there going to be any hangover there? That's going to be the key thing on whether or not Texas, who I think will be a playoff team, but as far as winning a division, not to say it's highly doubtful, but it's certainly, I won't go as far as saying skeptical. That's a little bit even too strong. But I would say that the Rangers, if they're able to stay afloat and be within an earshot of the division, I think they have a good shot. But if not, if for whatever the reason, the Astros get off to a good start and have a big enough lead to where they could thwart the Rangers as far as them making a run, then I think the Astros, this will be their division. As far as the rest of the division, Seattle, to me, they're like Toronto. That team that's in a holding pattern that can make moves, and they made a lot of trades this offseason and had a lot of turnover, but they do have very good starting pitching with Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert. Those are going to be the guys that's going to carry them into the postseason if they make it that far. Their lineup, I understand Julio Rodriguez. He's a guy, he's a young stud, could be a future MVP. But after that, you don't really have much. You do have some players, but you don't have a lineup that's going to, day in and day out, shake in the opposing pitcher's boots when he toes the rubber there on a 162-game basis. But they do have very good starting pitching, that you have to admit. But who knows what Seattle's going to be, to me, similar to Toronto. Then you have the Angels with Shohei Ohtani going up the freeway and knowing that you don't have to worry about that circus. Not to say it was much of a circus when he was there. It was more good than bad. But toward the end, when he left the team in the final 2 weeks, cleared out his locker, all the reports of him maybe not being the great teammate sticking around there at the final couple of weeks, knowing that he had possibly checked out and was looking for greener pastures. But for Ron Washington, who's now the manager of this team, the former third base coach of the Braves, and prior to that was the manager of the Texas Rangers, a guy that it's going to bank on his two stars and Anthony Rendon and Mike Trout to be healthy throughout the course of the season and putting it together with a rotation that, again, not going to startle you. It's not going to be a rotation that's going to be up in front where you're going into a series and you have to wonder whether or not you're going to be able to get out of a series alive. Reed Detmers, all right, decent starting pitcher. Tyler Anderson, okay. Guys like that are not going to have guys in the batter's box shaking in their boots. You know, the Patrick Sandovals of the world, even Matt Moore, who's bounced around here, Tampa, San Francisco, etc. So that's what you have there with the American League on a whole. And as far as the National League, the East, I'm going to save the Mets for last. I'll talk about the Mets here in this vein as far as the division, but as far as overall, you'll get my full preview as a diehard Met fan that I am. Braves, Phillies, we would think that the Braves, with all their talent and bringing in Jared Kelenic, which I thought was a very good move, a guy that's going to be in the outfielder, you would think, for years to come, young guy, drafted by the Mets, as we know, and then Chris Sale, they're going on a flyer to bring him in for 1 year, championship experience. Mind you, this team won a World Series 3 years ago. You bring him in to see if you can infuse not only some veteran presence to go with that youth there, whether it's Spencer Strider or Bryce Elder, even Max Fried for that matter, was going into a walk year, so a big year for him, if he could stay healthy, which is going to be very important. But the Braves are loaded, as we know, and same for the Phillies for that matter. The Phillies, they are built to win now, or at least in this immediate time frame with Bryce Harper, with guys like that, Nick Castellanos, the shortstop Trey Turner, their pitching staff led by Zach Wheeler, as well as Aaron Nola. You have Taijuan Walker and Ranger Suarez to round out your rotation there. And then your bullpen, although they had Kimbrel there last year, excuse me. But their bullpen they're good, they're solid. And year in and year out, you just don't know what you're going to get. But you would only hope that they could relive some of the magic from a couple of years ago, which got them to a World Series, the Sir Anthony Dominguez's of the world, the Jose Alvarados, guys like that. And you can only hope that they could ride that wave back to a World Series, which they were 2 games close last year and had the 2 games in their building before Arizona upset them. So the Phillies, I think, can have a big year. And the rest of the division, I know the Marlins won last year to the point where they made it into October, but they got swept there by the Phillies, as we know. And can they build off of that? Now, they lost Jorge Soler to the Giants in the offseason, so that's a big loss there from their offense. That's a guy that had 30-plus home runs in their lineup. So the Marlins do not have that type of figure to go along as a guy that can lengthen the lineup and could be that deep threat. This is a team that's going to do it predominantly more on guile, speed at the top with a guy like Luis Arraez, who's a singles hitter but a very good hitter, to boot John Birdie, who's another speedster, who could probably put in the ninth hole, so you could have that double leadoff component there to start off any inning. Josh Bell is a guy that has some pop, bounced around there from Washington, San Diego, Cleveland. What can he provide? That remains to be seen. But this team is going to bank on their rotation. Sixto Sanchez, a guy who had Tommy John, who is one of their up-and-coming stars in their rotation. What could he give to go along with Trevor Rogers? We all know about Sandy Alcantara, who had a very down year for him. And he made it to the postseason with him not having that Cy Young form that he had 2 years ago. So that's another guy. Tim Anderson is a guy they bring in on a flyer. 1 year, $5 million. What could he bring to that organization? Who knows? Hopefully not a lot of controversy. I know with his comments and maybe with his brash personality to Skip Schumacher, the manager who was manager of the year in the National League last year. So who knows what you're going to get from the Marlins, but you did. They are coming off of a big year, and who knows what to expect there. Then you have the Nationals who are on the come up, a team that is still probably a couple of years away with all the talent that they procured from trades with the Soto trade, bringing in guys like Mackenzie Gore and CJ Abrams, etc. And they did have a surprise here last year. I picked them as an under at 59.5, and they had wins in their 60s. I think they ended up with 67 wins. So that is a 8-win differential when you think about what the Vegas and the odds makers thought of the Nationals last year. And even though they're low this year, they're probably in the mid-60s as far as their over-under win total. But to me, they're still a couple of years away. And then you have the Mets, which is, like as I mentioned, one of those wild card teams. Not necessarily making the wild card, but like the Giants, the Padres, the second-tier teams in the National League behind LA, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Arizona, and I'll get to them in a little bit. And the NL Central, similar to the AL Central, I think is a toss-up. I know the Cubs, even with no Stroman, but with bringing back a guy like Cody Bellinger into the mix, and the Cubs, they're a team that is somewhere in the middle too. They were flirting with the wild card there late in the year, but they collapsed, losing those tough games in Milwaukee and especially in Atlanta down the stretch. So with the Cubs, I know that they have pretty much have moved on from the mid-20 teens where they had guys like Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, you know the players that won a World Series in 2016 to break that 108-year hex. And even though they made it to the postseason a couple of years after that, and yes, early on in the decade, in the 2020 year, they did make it to the postseason before losing to Miami in that opening round, the wild card. But the Cubs are still undefined. They're a team that is nondescript right now. I think they're below the Giants, Padres, and Mets, but they could maybe make some strides. We have to wait and see what the Ricketts family is going to do, the ownership there. But to me, again, can the Pirates take a leap from, what was it, 75, 76 wins to maybe get into the 80s? The Cardinals, you would think, with Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, even though Oliver Marmol is your manager, had a down year last year, but can they get themselves to win a division maybe somewhere in the mid to upper 80s? The Reds, a lot of people think that they could be a team with a lot of good young players led by Ellie De La Cruz, but I don't know if the Reds are going to be that team because they're pitching, although Hunter Green is very good, and they do have some pitching prospects and some guys that they are looking to bank on to see if they can have a big year, but still, unproven, young, I don't see it at this very stage. And then you have the Brewers who had taken big hits here, whether it's losing a manager, Craig Counsell, down the street there, the interstate going from Milwaukee to Chicago, just a 90-mile ride, and I understand even with Counsell there in Chicago, is he enough to kind of propel the Cubs to a division win? Maybe, but we'd have to wait and see about that. But the Brewers, who lost Corbin Burns in a trade, on top of that, have lost Brandon Woodruff coming back from that shoulder injury. He's gone for the year. Their closer, Devin Williams, is going to be out probably till the All-Star break with stress fractures in his back. Their offense, are they going to bank on Jackson Chourio, the center fielder who signed that big deal, just turned 20 years of age? Is he going to be the guy that's already going to be the face of the franchise as Christian Yelich, slowly but surely, even though I know he still has, what, 4 or 5 years left on that big deal he signed years ago. But Yelich, his star's falling big time there, and you're bringing in guys like Rhys Hoskins to kind of piecemeal it together. I don't know if the Brewers, maybe just based on that, but because of their pitching, I can't see them having a big year. Maybe it's the Cubs division by fault, and you would think the Cardinals is based on reputation because the Reds, Pot, and the Pirates, I don't know what they have in store. Although the Pirates, who knows, with Paul Skeens, the number one pick, could he come up in the early part or maybe middle of the year to add some life to a Pirate organization who, let's face it, they haven't had anything since the 90s, dating back to the Bobby Bonilla, Barry Bonds, Andy Van Slyke days. And I understand they had a little bit of success in the early 20-teens or the mid-20-teens with Andrew McCutchen and guys like that. Clint Hurdle is the manager. But that's what you have in the Central. And then out West, we talked about the Dodgers. No need to get into them any further. But the Padres, Giants, Diamondbacks, that's going to be an interesting race there. And I get it. A race for second doesn't count. But that is going to be a wheel of fortune or misfortune with those three organizations, because based on what the Diamondbacks did last year, the reputation of the Padres over the last few years, and even though with a new manager in tow now, because remember, Bob Melvin went up to San Francisco in the last couple of years being the Padre manager, as he was burnt out and having to juggle all of those egos and the absence of Fernando Tatis at times out of the lineup, especially when it comes to his health. But for the Padres, if they're going to have a big year, you have to look to their pitching staff, because although they have a very good offensive lineup, even without Juan Soto, but with Joe Musgrove, and obviously I mentioned earlier the Yu Darvishes, the Dylan Ceases of the world, guys like that, they can really go places. And even bringing guys like Michael King, the Yankee that they brought in the deal for Soto back in, December? Maybe they can make some noise. But the Giants and everything that they did this offseason, as I highlighted, those three teams are going to be fighting it out, I think, for quite possibly all of the playoffs, other than the Phillies for that matter. Because you would think it's going to be Atlanta, Philadelphia, whomever wins the NL Central, and then which three teams get the other two spots in the National League. And it could boil down to those three. So I think that's going to be a fight to the end. And in Colorado, I mean, listen, that's a team that doesn't have two of their big-time starters in Germán Márquez, who's coming back from Tommy John. You may not see him to the All-Star break. And Sensatella, the other pitcher who you may not even see to the end of the year, if that. And what's going to happen with Chris Bryant, as he's been a lost soul here over the last few years, especially his final couple of years in Chicago with injuries. And then in Colorado, the guy's been an afterthought to go along with Charlie Blackmon, who, as we all know, is a very good player. But I think Colorado is going to be the team that could end up being arguably the worst team in the National League. And then you have the Mets. First-time manager, Carlos Mendoza. You know he's going to be a puppet to the hierarchy there. David Stearns, the VP of Baseball Ops. So he's going to be the puppet where the front office is going to pull the strings. Pete Alonso in Milwaukee. I've talked about this before. I'll say it one last time. This is a monster year for him. Not to say he's going to have a monster year, but monster year from the standpoint of Scott Boras is his agent. If he has anything close to what he had last year with a better batting average, he's going to command easily $250 to $300 million right off the bat. That's number one. And then you have other guys who the team is banking on, but certainly you're not going to know what you're going to get. And more so from their rotation than it is from their position players. Mainly Sean Manaea, Luis Severino, those two guys in particular. Because Severino was arguably a top three starting pitcher in the AL 3-4 years ago. And Manaea was a very good pitcher with the A's, a guy that lefty, crafty, who could eat up innings. But again, he's not a guy that you're going to bank on as to be one of your top starters in your rotation. And of course, you're not going to have Kodai Senga to maybe the beginning of May, as we hope, maybe even earlier than that. Fingers crossed there. But the Tylor McGills of the world, I can't trust, or the Adrian Housers that they got from Milwaukee. I mean, these are guys that you're banking on to be a part of your rotation that if you're going to have any success, these guys are unproven. Not to say the Manaeas and Severinos, but you're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle with these guys. And you can't bank on that. And as far as the position players, listen, the Harrison Betas of the world, all right, let's see what he could do here as far as patrolling the outfield for one season, or even, a guy like Joey Wendell, who's a veteran bat, and you could piece him in there, second base, shortstop, third, to spell Francisco Lindor, put him in at third base because Brett Beatty won the job. I understand you have J.D. Martinez, another thumper in the lineup, which they desperately needed. But, I mean, these are guys that they're, with a wing and a prayer, are hoping to have big-time seasons. A bunch of what-ifs with the Mets. And at least they have Edwin Diaz coming back, and he's going to be a plus. But here's the thing. How many situations is Edwin Diaz going to be in the closeout games when the team is probably going to be middle of the pack, middling somewhere in the vicinity of 78 to 88 wins? Bottom line is, do I see this Met team competing? And when I mean competing, I'm talking about for a wild card. Now, you can only hope for Met fans that if they are in the running for a wild card spot, whether that means they're in the first, second, or third seed when it comes to record by the All-Star break, hovering around there, whether they're a game or two games behind, anything more than three games, forget about it. Are the Mets going to buy? You would think with Steve Cohen, the Mets will buy, but what does that mean? Does that mean they have to be in the top three and then they'll buy? Or does that mean that they're within striking distance, meaning that they're a game or two? I say three games because three games is the limit. Anything more than that, to me, I wouldn't even buy. But that's the question. Do they even make it to the All-Star break as a team that could possibly contend for a wild card? I don't know. And I know that's, oh, come on, Jay Reels, that's lame. What do you mean you don't know? Again, this team is banking on so much. Last year, I was even nervous, and their team on paper was loaded. This team is far from loaded on paper. And think about this. On top of everything I just said, going back to last year, check those receipts. Go to the baseball preview when I talk about disappointments. My disappointment, one of them were the Mets. And how did that turn out? Sadly, I was right. And I don't want to be right again. But in all fairness and in all seriousness, I think this Met team does have something to prove. There may be a little bit of a chip on the shoulder. Now, I don't know how the manager is going to do. And the manager, we understand, whatever decision he makes, it's not going to be all on him. It's not going to be in his gut. It's going to be upper management. So you have to take that in consideration. So before we kill Carlos Mendoza, let's say if Kodai Senga is 5 1/3 and he's coasting along against the Dodgers, and for Mendoza to go and pull him because, oops, the third time around the lineup and I got Betts, Freeman, and Ohtani coming up, of course, that's not going to be a situation where Mendoza said, oh, I got to pull him now. That's going to be Stearns and company. But I would think that this team, because they're flying under the radar, and good starts don't mean anything to me. Because remember, last year, the team got off to a 14-7 start to their season, and we know what happened. So fast starts, I'm not counting. This isn't the NFL where you could start off 4-0 and then crawl to 10-7. To me, they just have to be consistent. If they get off decent, they can't start 3-10. But they just have to play well enough just to hang around. And then you could only hope a deal here at the All-Star break or at the trade deadline, and you bring in a guy that could possibly be of help, that could maybe surprise and do some damage in October. That you could only hope for. Other than that, the Met number is 81.5. They're probably, I think their highest total they could get to is maybe 86. Remember, pitching staff people. And their bullpen, like I said, Diaz, you got to rely on the Drew Smiths of the world and Adam Ottavino, who had a good year one last year, in and out, up and down, but overall was good. Can he carbon copy that? I could go on forever with this team, so I'll just leave it at that. So I think the Mets, I think they're going to fall short of the postseason. But I think they'll hang around enough to at least keep the fans interested deep into August and into September. And we'll see where the chips fall, where they may at that point. Now, my surprises and disappointments. Let me get to that real quick. I want to keep this under an hour, people. And I'm getting toward the back end of this. So, surprise teams. National League, I'm going to say the Giants. And I know people are going to say, whoa, how could you say the Giants are a surprise team? Look at all the moves that they made this offseason. They got the Korean infielder. They bring in Chapman, Blake Snell, Jorge Soler. But this team, ever since they won 107 games 2 years ago, remember, they lost to the Dodgers in the opening round or in the divisional series, haven't done anything since. And now as they shifted, as they've tried to bring in guys like Aaron Judge or even Shohei Ohtani, Carlos Correa, etc., now they have a semblance of a team. Now, granted, are they going to be world beaters? Absolutely not. But I think this team could compete for a wild card spot. And who knows, once you get into the postseason, anything goes. And when you have Blake Snell, who I get it, six-inning pitcher, more so a five-inning pitcher, but with Logan Webb and have good starting rotation, this is a team that could make some noise and could be a surprise. Maybe they could end up winning 90 games when it's all said and done. And I have to pull up what their number is in Vegas, as I'm doing that right now. Vegas has them somewhere in the 80s, 83 and a half. And it's funny, I didn't pick them as an over. But I'll leave that right there. So that's my one surprise team, my disappointing team in the National League. And no, it's not the Mets. I'm going to say the Brewers. And I know that that's something based on what I said earlier as far as having new manager. The team is still trying to find its way, especially with that rotation. They piecemealed it with guys like Rhys Hoskins and, you know, Yelich can even come back to be a semblance of his old self. I don't even know if that's going to be the case. But you could only hope and pray, if you're a Brewer fan, that you could be in the running for a division, because I don't think you're getting a wild card. So that means everybody else has to be somewhere about 82, 83, 85 wins in order for the Brewers, because I don't think they're going to have a big time year. So I think they're going to be a disappointment. Now, as far as the American League goes, surprise. I said this last year, and boy, did I fall flat on my face with this one. The Kansas City Royals, I know their number is 73 and a half, and maybe they could be this year's Pirates to be mid to upper 70s. I understand it's not a stretch. That's not going out on a limb by any stretch of the imagination. But you signed Bobby Witt to a long-term deal. That's a good thing, so you don't have to worry about him running off into the night when it comes to him with free agency and even have to deal with arbitration and things of that nature. But the Royals, and not to say that they're going to be a playoff team or even in the thick of things when it comes to the wild card, by any means necessary, that is not the case. But you do have a veteran presence there and a guy who won the final piece of that World Series puzzle 9 years ago and won Salvador Perez. Then you have pitchers who they brought along here over the course of the years, whether it's guys like Seth Lugo, the former Met, as we know, Jordan Lyles, who's bounced around, Nick Anderson, a guy who pitched in Tampa. So, and he's a reliever, for the, as we know, but you have guys like that. Will Smith, another one, who is a guy who's been around the block. Michael Wacha, as we know. Kyle Wright, to see if he can reclaim any magic from that 21-win season when he was a member of the Atlanta Braves. And as far as their day-to-day players, guys like Adam Frazier, who are good players, hard-nosed players, lunch pail players. Garrett Hampson, most notably known as a Colorado Rocky. Also, MJ Melendez, who's a very good defensive outfielder, speedster, but not going to add a lot. Hunter Renfroe does add some pop. You're only hoping to get some progression from Vinny Pascantino, who's another guy that can provide a lot of power. A guy who is hopefully could take that next step as a guy that can maybe take this Royal franchise to some respectability. So I'm going to pick them as a surprise, because other than that, I'm not picking Toronto's not going to be a surprise team, or Seattle. I'm not picking the Angels, although they could be a team that could lay in the weeds, but I don't believe in their pitching, as I talked about earlier. And my other disappointment are the Tampa Bay Rays. They have no Shane McClanahan. He's out for Tommy John surgery. Who's your top starter? You got to have a starter there, even though we know the Rays operate more like a team that has a bunch of openers and guys that are just going to try to go through the opposition based on a bullpen game. Zach Eflin, good story last year, but he's not a guy that you could really rely on as far as a top of the rotation guy. And yes, they do have some players on the team, the Randy Arozarenas of the world, and Yandy Diaz, who's a good stick. You also have the one young kid that is, you would think would be a replacement for Juan DeFranco, and who knows where that's going to go, because that seems to be out in the wilderness somewhere as far as what his status means to the team. But you know he's not going to suit up at any point. But they do have another guy in Junior Caminero, I believe is his name, who could possibly be the Juan DeFranco for this team, as a guy that I'm sure the Rays are hoping to have a highly productive year from. But Tampa, I'm not picking them as an over-under, but although a lot of people think, as resourceful as they are and built for the regular season, they are due to have a down year, and for whatever the reason, I think this is going to be the down year. And we'll have to wait and see. We get it. Understood 100%. But that's how I'm looking at my disappointments. Milwaukee in the National League, and then Tampa in the AL. Now, let me quickly go through my over-unders for the season. Over-unders, as you know, Vegas puts out the total, and then I'm going to either pick the over or the under. Three overs, three unders. And I'm going to breeze through these because I pretty much touched on a lot of these teams. Overs, I'm picking the Orioles. 89.5 is that number, seriously? They won 101 last year. They brought in Corbin Burns. Their lineup is a GM's, I hate to say it like this, but it's the truth, wet dream with young stars and stars that you're not even paying top dollar for as of yet. And for them to, even if they get to 98, come on, 89.5? Now, barring major injuries, and we all know that can happen at any moment, especially with the starting rotation. But for Baltimore, although they don't have Felix Bautista back in, as I mentioned, and he was a big part of that team last year until they got to September, and then, of course, had to get the Tommy John. But you also have to remember, based on his success last year and everything I talked about, I picked them as an over right from the start. I'm going to stick to the well here. Arizona, I picked them last year as an over, and that was a surprise. And as we all know, they went to the World Series. But with Jordan Montgomery, Eduardo Rodriguez, and I'm not trying to make these guys out to be Warren Spahn and Sandy Koufax, but those are two guys you're adding to your rotation to go along with the Brandon Fott of the world, the Zach Gallens, as well as the Merrill Kellys, and they have good young position players, as you saw, Gabriel Moreno, the catcher. We know about Corbin Carroll, who's your reigning NL Rookie of the Year. Ketel Marte, very good player. They have a very good squad, and their bullpen is actually very good too. So that NL West, as I talked about, that's going to be a fight to see who's going to make it into the wild card. They're not going to win a division. That's going to be the Dodgers. But I think Arizona will be above 83.5. That's choice number two. And yes, why not? As I mentioned last year, I even picked the Pirates as an over at 74.5, and they won. I'm going to pick Kansas City 73.5 for everything that I just mentioned about them, hoping that they could bank on just some promise with their young core on top of a weak AL Central. And I'm going to get to another team who's going to be on my under as far as the AL Central. And let me get to that right now as I get to my under. So those are my three overs. Sadly, I'm picking the Brewers 76.5 as an under for everything that I just explained. And I know I tipped my hand, not only just based on the division breakdown, but also my disappointment. Colorado 59.5, same deal there. They're not going to have two of their key starters. Chris Bryant, can he hold up for a whole year? Charlie Blackman, is he going to carry the mail for 162 games? He is not Babe Ruth. And yes, I'm picking Colorado as an under 59.5. And then the Guardians. No Terry Francona. You have Stephen Vogt, first-time manager, young guy. Again, Cleveland's going to pull the strings on Vogt as far as his decision-making goes. And yes, I like their bullpen, Emmanuel Clase, and you still have Shane Bieber, but who knows? Bieber could be dangled at the trade deadline to bring back a King's ransom, especially if he has a big-time year, the former Cy Young Award winner. But day-to-day, other than Jose Ramirez, and I understand Stephen Kwan, he's a good young Punch and Judy hitter in the outfield, a left fielder. Other than that, you have nothing in this lineup. And 79.5, I know they're resourceful, but Francona's gone. Now this is Stephen Vogt's team. So I believe the GM, Let me see if I get this correct. There's a guy, the GM, on the team who has been there for many years, and it'll come to me. But anyway, they have a young GM who has put this team together. It's not Mark Shapiro. But how I look at it is, even with a weak division, and maybe the Royals on the come up, and who knows with the Tigers, and you would think that the Twins are the class, Cleveland took a step back last year, and I think they're going to do the same this year. In fact, the GM is Mike Chernoff. I said Shapiro, got my names mixed up. So Mike Chernoff, he's a guy that has put this team together. Whether or not they're going to compete in that division, I don't think so. I think they're going to fall under as far as that goes. So to break it all down, my three overs, Baltimore 89.5, Arizona 83.5, Kansas City 73.5. My unders, Milwaukee 76.5, Cleveland 79.5. Colorado 59.5. It's no fun to pick Yankees, Dodgers, Astros. No, you got to go middle of the pack. You got to tease the brain a little bit. You got to think this through. It's easy. Oh, Yankees 92.5 is an over. Now, I understand if I want to get slam dunk picks, yes. But who knows? These picks may have 3-3 written all over it, or maybe even 2-4 when it's all said and done. But this is the fun part of this exercise. That's why I do it. And if you're wondering why I didn't pick the top teams, that's because the reason. I'm not going to do that because it's a formality, a slam dunk to pick those teams. And with that being said, my World Series pick, I'm not picking Yankees-Dodgers. I'm not picking Yankees-Atlanta. I'm not picking Astros-Dodgers. Any one of those combinations or Houston-Atlanta, we saw that 3 years ago. I know the whole world would want to see Yankees-Dodgers, and even though this would be very tough for me to admit with every fiber of my being, a Yankee-Dodger World Series would be fascinating. I hope that's not the case. As everybody knows, if you've watched me over the years, and especially if you watch my vlog, Another Winter I Can Sleep in Peace, rest in peace to the 2023 Yankees, watch that. I implore you, encourage you to do so. I hope I get another year to say that. But I know that that would be the ultimate World Series for everybody to watch, as I mentioned at the very top with my two storylines. But my World Series, and it's interesting because I saw it this morning on First Take, a show that I don't really watch. I only watch it for Chris Mad Dog Russo. And he picked the same World Series that I did. And I understand people say, oh, who cares what Chris Russo has to think? We want to know what Jay Reels thinks. I'm picking a Baltimore-Philadelphia World Series, 1983. Remember when the Orioles won in 5, but this time I'm picking the Phils to win in 6. There is your 2024 Major League Baseball preview in a big, giant nutshell. That'll do it, my good people. Another episode in the books. I appreciate you wholeheartedly. Thank you so much for stopping by to listen to what it is I have to say, not only about baseball, about the preview, but anything happens to do with what goes on in the world of sports. If you haven't done so, please subscribe, rate, review. Throw me a few stars, write a review, as you heard at the top. Also, subscribe, rate, like, comment on my YouTube channel, at JReels. Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the JReels Podcast. If you want to hit me up with a question, comment, or suggestion, or the old-fashioned way, the JReelsPodcast at gmail.com. Also on Twitter, XJReels1, just a number. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood, it's in the DNA, as I like to say. Talking sports, every fiber of my being, with nothing but passion, fire, fury, energy, with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything. That happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the J Reels Podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx, the South Beach, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the J Reels Podcast, on the flip, baby.